Heart of the Matter, where we slice up today's divisive political issues into bite-sized portions that fit neatly at the dinner table.
In other words, we discuss the issues in such a way that even your husband can understand.
The thing that separates us from the animals is our ability to accessorize.
Heart of the Matter is hosted by a trio of brilliant, liberty-minded patriots known as the Americhicks.
Practicing physician and one of America's foremost authorities on Obamacare, Dr. Jill Vecchio. Registered investment advisor, financial columnist, and field director for Americans for Prosperity, Molly Vogt. Accomplished businesswoman, entrepreneur, former financial advisor, and current city councilwoman, Kim Monson.
There isn't any room at the top for local girls like us.
The fight we have, and the fight I'm asking you to engage in, is between the establishment and the grassroots. Because the establishment has given us a whole series of losers.
Now, let's get to the heart of the matter
on the Crawford Broadcasting Network.
Betty, happy June 1st, 2014. Welcome to Heart of the Matter, where we discuss politics like well-behaved adults ought to. We are rant-free radio designed for folks who want to understand the issues but don't like the rhetoric and divisiveness of typical talk radio. I am Jill Vecchio, here with my fellow Americhicks, Kim Munson and Molly Vogt. And we want to say hello to Birmingham and Huntsville, Alabama, Portland, Oregon, the Front Range of Colorado, Southern Wyoming, Western Kansas, and everybody else out there who is listening online or on TuneIn Radio. We're so glad you joined us today. We are going to have a fun show.
It's going to be a great show. Definitely. So how can people contact us, Molly?
Well, Facebook, like us. We are the Americhicks. And of course, we'll be watching all day, all during the show. So if you've got any questions or anything like that, any comments you want to mention, just send them to us via Facebook. Also, you could reach us on Gmail. We are the Americhicks at Gmail. And then our website is americhicks.com. And like Jill mentioned, listen to us live either through our website or through TuneIn Radio. Give us a call, 303-477-5600. And I wanted to add on to that because, you know, you were talking about kind of the reason we do the show. There are a lot of people that don't want to listen to the rant and rave and the yelling about politics. And there are people that want to discuss solutions. And that's what we do here. We discuss solutions, come up with different ideas. We're not just saying, oh, it's terrible. You know, it's terrible. We have nothing to do and just complain. We're here to talk about free market solutions. We want to help be a part of solving the problem. So we want to ask our listeners, join us, call us, talk about it. Because together, if we put all of our brains together, we can fix what's going wrong in this country.
Now, Molly, that's a good point. And also, we do a lot of research on this. We're really working to try to unpack the issues of the day and be a trusted source for you so that you can understand how these issues affect you and your family, and then you can make your decisions from that.
Right. You know, one of the reasons we did the show was because over years of reading the newspaper, I actually stopped reading the newspaper because two-thirds or three-quarters of an article would be what everybody thought about an issue rather than what are the facts about this issue. Tell me what happened. I don't care what somebody else thought. I'll make my own decision and form my own opinions based on facts. But they don't give you any facts. They just want to tell you what to think. So that's part of why we did the show, is because we want to give you the facts as best as we can possibly sort them out so you can make your own decision.
Yeah. And to go with that, Jill, you know, that's why we started the show, because we're sitting here going through, reading the news, saying this doesn't sound right. I've got to do my research. And we started uncovering so many things that none of us knew before.
Right.
And we thought, wow, if this is new information to us, it's probably new information to some other people out there. So let's share it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, usually we have the show set up in kind of three segments. We're going to talk about some current events, and we'll still do that today. Usually then the next segment, we go through a part of the Constitution. So which we should have been doing the 11th and 12th Amendments, and 11, 12, and 23, I think we're going to put together amendments to the Constitution today. But we're not going to do that because we're having a very special show today for everybody. And especially focusing on solutions. We're going to be talking about the VA scandal. And Molly did some great research that this is hardly the first scandal of the VA. The list is unbelievable. It's like pages long.
Right.
So we'll go over some of the history of the VA and kind of set the stage for what's happening in the VA now and what's actually been happening for a long, long time. And we're also going to have we're going to talk about solutions, and we're going to have Congressman Tom Tancredo, who is running for governor, call into the show. He's going to call in about 4:30. He can be here from 4:30 to 5. But then the neat thing is his office called me this week and said, what can we do in Colorado for our veterans? And it got me to thinking. And I talked to Kim and Molly, and we've come up with a proposal for what we can do without government, what we as Americans and Coloradoans can do to help people that have risked their lives for our country all by ourselves.
We can do better than what we are giving our veterans right now, that's for sure. But we're always looking for interesting current events. And I always try to look a little bit under the radar on these. And there were two things that came up this week that I thought were of great concern. So my first question is, what do you ladies think the definition of racism is?
Judging somebody by the color of their skin. And
right.
Thinking that, and by judging them, you're thinking that they are less than you. They are less adequate, less smart, less of a human being than you are. They are beneath you.
Well, and also taking that skin color just defining them by that.
They're like as if there's some stereotype associated with skin color.
Right, right. I actually, a week ago, I get to do some really fun things being on city council, and I got to go to a leadership, I was on a panel for elementary school kids, and it was so fun, all these little kids. And anyway, I told a story about George Washington, and we talked about Lincoln, and this little guy came up to me afterwards. He was in fourth grade. His name was Alexis. And he asked about George Washington and Abraham Lincoln, and I said that he asked what happened to Lincoln. I said, well, he'd been assassinated. And he said, well, what does that mean? I said, well, somebody killed him because, you know, they didn't really like him that much. He goes, oh, kind of like Martin Luther King Jr. I said, yeah, kind of like that. And I said, you know, we don't really, I mean, you can't really define somebody by just that little millimeter of, as Albert Guillory said, on the outside of your skin. And he goes, yeah, we're all the same, aren't we? We have two eyes and two ears and fingernails. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so adorable. And he said, yeah, you really can't define somebody by that. And this is a fourth grader, okay? But I wanted to let you know that per an article, Daily Caller, I'd seen this several different places by Neil Munro, the Obama administration is seeking a race-based government in Hawaii. The administration has quietly suggested that it is willing to create a two-tier race-based legal system in Hawaii, where one set has a certain set of taxes, spending, and law enforcement that will govern one race, and a second set of laws that will govern another race. Now, I think that's racism.
Absolutely racism. It doesn't matter. I mean, just by treating one group separately from another because of the color of their skin or their heritage, creed, whatever, is racism. It doesn't matter if it comes from government or where it comes from. And the idea that they're going to have a different set of laws, is that what you said? A different set of laws?
Mm-hmm.
Good grief. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Constitution was set up specifically so that everyone would have equal treatment under the law.
Definitely. And there was a very interesting quote by Gail Harriet, who is a law professor at the University of San Diego. She's also a commissioner on the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. And she says, if you can do that with groups that are already part of the mainstream, you can balkanize the country. And she said, the proposed measure to increase legal diversity is illegal because the president doesn't have the power to grant one group of Americans the status of a separate government. There is no constitutional basis for conferring such a status.
Now, that being said, so I guess, you know, and what they're talking about in Hawaii is the Native Hawaiians, which is actually, I think, a pretty small, there aren't that many truly Native Hawaiians left. So they want to separate treatment of those. Is that going to be analogous to how we treat Native Americans here in the States? Because we've talked about, like, the Indian nations and so forth are separate nations. They do have a different set of laws that apply to Native American Indians under many years of law and treaties.
Welcome back to Heart of the Matter. This is Molly, Jill, and Kim, and we are the AmeriChicks. We're talking today about a very special topic. We're going to be talking about the VA scandal, and we're going to talk about some solutions. But right now, we're talking a little bit about some current events. And Kim was just telling us before we went to break about the Obama administration seeking a race-based government in Hawaii. And, I think about the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. Since Hawaii is a state in our union, they joined us in 1954, they are protected under our Constitution. The 14th Amendment guarantees the same rights to all citizens of the United States. And what this administration is seeking to do is to segregate us again.
Yeah, it's astonishing, Molly. And this move was announced the Friday right before Memorial Day. It said, as White House officials and congressional Democrats stepped up predictions that the president will try to bypass congressional opposition to his progressive policy preferences.
And, so let's talk about some of the differences between Native Americans and the Native Hawaiians. So when Hawaii became a state in 1959, I believe, that was the year I was born, yep. Right? So, y'all know how old I am. oops. That's all I can remember.
Get your calculator.
Yeah, Hawaii became a state in 1959, and so there were Hawaiian natives. They didn't separate out the natives and say, no, you're not American citizens. So the American natives in Hawaii, the Hawaiian natives, are U.S. citizens. They already enjoy all of the everything that the other American citizens enjoy. They vote and everything else. Now, the Native American Indians were a conquered people, pretty much. I mean, at that time that we had treaties with them, and that was a whole mess too. But we had treaties with them, gave them separate land, actually forced them onto land that was not their native land, and all that. You know, there's a lot of injustice, but they were treated like a conquered people, and then separated out completely from the rest of the country and treated very differently for well over 100 years. So
Well, the difference, Jill,
is a very different situation.
It is a different situation. The Hawaiians came in as full citizens. In fact, they've had representation. Senator Daniel Akaka is a native Hawaiian senator. So representation, so certainly mainstreamed. And so the idea that our administration, who's always talking about inclusiveness, who's always talking about, bringing us together, it sounds good.
They say one thing and they're doing something totally different.
Doing the exact opposite. He is saying what we want to hear. We do believe that in America.
Right.
We have been the big melting pot. But instead, I think he wants us to be a big salad bowl.
I think a lot of people voted for him because they thought he was going to bring the country together. And it's not worked out that way, in my opinion.
Right. Well, and either we have a constitution or we don't. And if somebody moves into Hawaii, say from South America or, another country, aren't they going to go through the same process to become a naturalized citizen of the United States? And aren't they going to make a pledge to the Constitution as well? And does this Constitution not apply to them anymore?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Wouldn't they have to change that process if they do this, if they start treating citizens differently?
Well, isn't it just so strange? Because none of it makes sense. It doesn't make sense. They're making up the rules as they go along. This administration is doing some of the weirdest stuff. I mean, every administration does some weird stuff. But these guys are just kind of making up the rules as they go along, ignoring the Constitution right and left, ignoring the Bill of Rights. I don't understand why people aren't more angry about it. I mean, there are a lot of angry people, but, maybe they all need a radio show.
Well, I do think that people are becoming more and more concerned. Instead of defining by what brings us together, it seems that this administration is trying to define us by what separates us. And, we have this group of women that we all get together and talk and, and recently one of the things that comes up is people are concerned about the divisiveness. Mm-hmm. And so for an administration that said they're going to bring us together, which is people believe that. But as you say, Jill, says one thing, does another.
Yeah. I think whenever you start to separate people out by their ethnic groups, colors of their skin, you're certainly not bringing the country together. But I think they're also using that separation, that separateness, to pit one group against another, to justify taking money from one group and giving it to another, to buy votes and to separate and to keep us separate. It's kind of like the divide and conquer thing.
Mm-hmm.
When we can't unite because of infighting or jealousy or envy between the groups, then we can't unite together to do what's right and do mm-hmm. what's constitutional and stand up for our rights and property and so forth as American citizens.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So we just wanted to bring that forward to all of you. And if you have any comments, certainly join the conversation. The second thing, and this will segue beautifully into what we'll be doing at 4:30, but this is from an AOL article that I saw. And the title is "The Military is Working on a Chip to Fight Mental Illness." So the military is working on a chip that can be implanted in our veterans that supposedly can if it detects that there's some kind of depression or something going on, that the brain can be stimulated. And I mentioned this to Jill and Molly this week, and
wow.
And it brought emotion to all of us, I would say.
a little bit. You know, and we're going to be talking about the VA scandal. Think about this. You know, the military is kind of a captive audience, so to speak, for our government, potentially. And the government can require, or the commander-in-chief, i.e. the president, can require military to do a whole lot of things. And they are supposed to, and typically they are going to obey those orders.
But
this, frightens me and sickens me.
The assumption on this is that the commander-in-chief is protecting the Constitution as well, that the purpose is the same, that defending the Constitution, which in essence is protecting the American people. And when people are able to live their lives safely, they can live their optimum lives.
Well, and also, okay, I'm sorry, does such a chip exist? Boy, gosh, you would think we'd have heard about that a long time ago. Are they developing? I think you had some timeline, Kim, for the development of this chip. And so if this chip is being developed and it's so great at mental illness, why wouldn't we want those chips to be implanted in a whole bunch of other people as well? Why just military? I just think this whole thing is a scam. I think this is just so scary. The idea of stimulating areas of the brain through an implanted chip. And who gets to decide who's doing the stimulating? I mean, you don't mess around with the brain. You just, I would never, ever have one of those things implanted.
It's really of great concern. But Jill, this is going through the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, which is DARPA. And it says they're launching. I didn't make it up.
DARPA, BARPA, whatever. You know, yeah, I got it.
So they're launching a 5-year program. And per a Scientific American article that I saw, it says the Obama administration has committed $110 million next year and possibly billions over the next decade to what they call the BRAIN Initiative. And this stands for Brain Research Through Advancing Innovative Neurotechnologies.
Talk about controlling us by our health care.
So what, the military is the guinea pig? Is that kind of, I mean, this is just, this is like sci-fi.
It is.
This is like the stuff I watched when I was a little kid and it scared the crap out of me. Wow.
It is scary. And, you know, I was looking into it. And I'm like, okay, let's look at historically probing the human brain. And I found this case in 1874, Mary Rafferty experiment. Are you familiar with
that? No.
Dr. Robert Bartholo, he found this woman. She had a cancerous ulcer in her brain, and he was doing this test on her and got her permission to do it, but of course didn't tell her what all was going to happen. He was administering small electric shocks directly into the brain. She began to spasm, went into convulsions, went into a coma, ended up dying from the whole thing. She had numbness, paralysis, motor weakness. After her final session, it said she became incoherent, slumped into a coma, and died.
Yeah.
And he was so enthusiastic. He was so enthusiastic to report he had induced the same type of seizure in a human that Ferrier had achieved in animals. They can induce seizures
in
people by doing this to their brain.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that's part, and part of how you treat seizures, like chronic intractable seizures in people, is to go in and you stimulate parts of the brain to, you know, make it recur, and then you can kind of nuke those little parts of the brain so that hopefully people won't have seizures. But absolutely, a seizure is by definition electronic stimulation kind of gone awry in the brain.
Welcome back to Heart of the Matter. I'm Kim Munson here with my fellow Americhicks, Jill Vecchio and Molly Vogt. It is a beautiful day here in Colorado.
It is. I hope everybody is having such a wonderful, gorgeous spring.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been a great week, an interesting week. And Jill had alluded to, she's been thinking, Molly. She's been thinking.
And when
Jill starts thinking, you never know what's going to happen. But, you know, this Veterans Administration scandal, really two things. The fact that the care has really been substandard for a long time. And then secondly, the falsifying of records. So there's really two things going on. But you had a conversation this week, Jill, that really got you going.
Absolutely. Former Congressman Tom Tancredo, who is now running for governor, called on, I think it was Tuesday evening. Not a lot of notice, you know, between Tuesday and now. So we've been scrambling to get this show ready for you. And they said, you know, what do you think about the VA scandal? And, you know, you'll find out what a long history of the VA being messed up there actually exists. So we kind of talked about that. And he said, well, what can we do in Colorado for our Colorado veterans that are on waiting lists? Got me to thinking. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, wow, there could really be a whole lot we could do as just average American, wonderful capitalist citizens, and it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, uninvolved, I don't care, Christian, atheist, it doesn't matter. This is something we can all come together on. So like we talked about the divisiveness. Now let's all come together to fix this problem. We're going to present some of our ideas. And there's not like all these ideas are the perfect ones, but during the course of the rest of the show, we're going to spend the whole show on this. We're going to talk about our ideas for healthcare reform, and we want to hear from you with your ideas. Before we go any further, I want to introduce Congressman Tom Tancredo. He's on the line, and I'm going to give you a little bit of a bio from him. On him, he started in the Colorado House of Representatives in politics in 1976. He went to the Ronald Reagan and Bush administrations and served in the Department of Education. He then ran for Congress and served in Congress from 1999 to 2009. He has run for President of the United States. He ran for governor and came in second place in 2010 in the governor's race, and now he's running for governor again. Welcome, Congressman. How are you today?
I'm just great. We had a beautiful day, mostly at grandchildren's baseball games. So
well, it was perfect weather for that. That's for sure.
It was, and they won both. So, oh man, it
yay!
Was.
Yay!
And that, believe me, I hate to tell you this, but it doesn't happen all that often.
I never could hit the little ball off the little tee thing very well sometimes.
Yeah, well, this is just 1 year past that for the little one.
Oh, how fun.
Half coach pitch and half team pitch. So anyway, yeah, it is, gosh, the little one's eight, and I swear it's just the cutest thing to watch and very enjoyable for grandma and grandpa.
Oh, that's fine. I'm glad you got to go. And now you have another event at 5:30 this evening, so you can join us for just half an hour today. Is that right?
That is correct. Yes.
Okay, and we're glad that you could join us.
I'm in West Denver today, so I have to depart around that time.
Okay. Why don't you give us a little background on how you happened to contact me, kind of what you were thinking and so forth when you heard about the VA scandal?
Sure. It put me in mind, of course, of the kind of problems that I faced as a member of Congress when trying to deal with the VA. We had a group, and I think most congressmen do. It's not something that's required, but most congressmen have a group of veterans that serve on a committee for them. Mine did double duty. They would interview all of the applicants that we had for the various, for the congressional when a congressman actually does send your name to one of the various academies, we have to interview the kids first to see which ones go forward. And so they did that, but then they also, we would meet every month, and we would talk about the various issues that confronted the VA. And so the problems with not being able to be served, certainly on time or sometimes forever, the problems that we had because the VA was, we were just in the process of trying to get the Veterans Hospital built, moved from the old location over there on about 9th and Colorado Boulevard out to Fitzsimmons, the campus out there that is, you know, so incredibly beautiful, and it's a model for all, it's called BRAC, or base realignment. And so when a base closes, this is something that most people around the country come to look at to see what we've done at Fitzsimmons. It's wonderful. And so we were very excited about getting that moved. And then you become acquainted with the incredible, and I mean incredible, bureaucracy. Now, you're in government, so you're used to it. You see it all the time. Bureaucracy in its finest. But, boy, with the VA, it was amazing. And we began a fight because the original plan to move out to Fitzsimmons included a design that would allow two towers to be built, one for the University of Colorado Medical Center and all of its research and services, and the second one would be adjacent to it, and it would be a VA tower. And there would be connecting walkways, and it wasn't, they were separate, but they were connected by covered walkways and that sort of thing. It was really a beautiful design, and it, what it provided was the ability for the Veterans Administration to tap into the research being done at the University Hospital, which, again, is worldwide. It's known worldwide and lauded by the medical people everywhere. Mm-hmm. So we thought it was a great idea, and they did not. Well, why? It turns out simply they wanted their own separate campus. They didn't want to be next to the University of Colorado. Big fight ensued. Okay, they eventually won. We are still in the process of building that facility, and we are now almost $500 million over budget.
And 2 years behind budget, from what I heard from somebody that I ran into yesterday. It's actually one of the contractors at the VA.
The changes were, and how the bureaucracy enters in, is that these contractors would, of course, you know, the contract called for certain specifications, but they changed on them constantly.
Right.
So you'd have something built, you'd have to tear it down, or start a whole new construction project around it. And this went on and has still, as you say, it is still going on, and it's just an example of the kind of problems. How many people have, therefore, not been well served? How many veterans have been unable to obtain service because of the delay and the bureaucratic mess that we face with, honestly, one of the worst, most intransigent and moribund bureaucracies I have ever come up
with. And that's so true. And I think I told you, and I mentioned it to our listeners last week, but I spent 8 years of my training. I went to CU for medical school. It's a great medical school. I went there for 4 years and then did my radiology residency and my women's imaging fellowship at CU, and we also worked at CU, Denver General or Denver Health, and the VA Hospital. I can tell you, actually, a connection between the two would be perfect because we shared all the training. The VA is a teaching hospital also, so as a medical student and resident, we all worked at all these places, and to have them next to each other and not connected by some kind of a tunnel network or a bridge makes it really difficult in the winter, and there were actually some safety issues at the old Colorado and 9th Avenue.
Yeah, it was a mess.
Address. Yeah, I mean, I used to have to call a security guard to walk me from the university over to the VA and back at night when I was on call.
Wow.
So, yeah, so being able to share that kind of stuff is a great opportunity for the VA. I think not all of them have access to that. And Denver actually had a pretty good VA. I mean, we were pretty well respected among VA facilities. We had at the time, it was a new hospital. I just wanted to tell people a little bit. So the VA system is separate from military hospitals. So right now at the Fitzsimmons campus, they still have Fitzsimmons Army Medical Center, which is this great building, fabulous building that's still there, and it's just dwarfed now by the other huge buildings on that campus. So the military hospitals are separate from the VA hospitals. Like Walter Reed is a military hospital. And then we have the VA system has many, many, many different medical centers around the country. Each state has. Does every single state have a VA hospital?
No. Okay. No.
I didn't think so. They're kind of regional, aren't they?
That's correct. And we are regional for several states around us. Wyoming, I know for sure. I can't remember the rest now. But I do remember that when we discussed the problems with my VA committee, one of the things I brought up to them on more than one occasion was the idea of voucherizing the process so that we simply provide a voucher to every single veteran that would enable him to purchase at the time, that was, purchase an insurance policy equal to or better than what they were awarded, the kind of medical care they were awarded from the VA, and make it totally optional. If you wanted to stay with the VA system, you certainly could. If you wanted to accept a different avenue because you were not being well served, then that would be open to you. Well, it met with what I would say mixed reviews. I mean, there about half of the people on the committee liked it, and the other half was. It's like everything else. It's when you've got something that you feel is yours alone, and you know these are vets who said this system is mine. I kind of have some ownership in it. I feel a part of it, and they were. Some of them, not all, but some of them were reluctant to move to a system that provided any kind of different service. So that's why I kept telling them, look, it's totally what I'm considering. And this was just simply a thought of mine. It wasn't I did put it into a bill form once, but it never even got a hearing. And I said, you know, I just am suggesting this as an alternative because I hear your complaints, and I'm telling you that dealing with the VA as we are trying to do, we had one person on the staff full time that did nothing but veterans issues, and 90% of his time was taken up with dealing with the veterans health care. So, as I said, it's a major undertaking for any congressman, certainly, to try and change it. And once you get into it and take a look at it, as Congressman Kaufman has seen, it becomes a morass that you walk away just shaking your head and thinking, you know, why isn't anybody really in this for the right reason? I mean, it seemed like, certainly I believe the doctors and the professionals, the healthcare people that deliver the healthcare, I believe they certainly are in it for the right reason. It's just that all of the folks surrounding them that run the bureaucracy of the Veterans Administration have a different motive many times, and it's very selfish and it's self-aggrandizing.
Tom, when you say that, I agree with you, this is Kim here, that I'm sure that the doctors and all the staff really care about the patients, but the problem is the incentives are wrong.
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right. It is, you know, this is a perfect example of something, I think. We talk about Obamacare, and we talk about the benefits that will accrue, at least, the supporters of Obamacare. Talk about the benefits that would accrue to the average American. Hello?
Oh, yeah, you can keep going for about 30 more seconds.
Well, it's just a perfect example. Here's a government system that wants to take care of 400 million and another government health care system that can't take care of 9 million who are eligible and 5 million who actually take advantage of it.
Thanks a lot, Tom. Stay on for the break. Hi, welcome back to Heart of the Matter. I'm Jill Vecchio here with my fellow Americhicks, Kim Munson and Molly Vogt. You can call us at 303-477-5600. We're talking about the VA and some of the ongoing problems. This scandal is not new by any stretch of the imagination. And we have former Congressman Tom Tancredo on the line. He's also running for governor. Before I forget, Tom, do you want to give your information for people who would like to donate to your campaign or learn more about you?
Oh, sure. Just go to governortancredo.org and you'll have all those opportunities.
Yay. So we've been talking about your experience in Congress with the VA issues. So did you feel like when you were in Congress, nothing really was getting done to address this? It's such a huge, insidious process that has been around for so long. And like I said, Molly is going to give us a timeline at the 5 o'clock hour. We just want to get as much information from you as possible in the amount of time you can spend with us. What was the feeling of the Congress in general, in your opinion, at that time about the VA?
Well, everybody, I think, felt as I did, that it was a difficult, if not impossible, organization to work with. And I can remember, we went through a couple of directors, even under the Bush administration and before, and I remember people essentially throwing up their hands and saying, this is impossible. I mean, and I'll tell you, you couldn't get me to take on the task of running that agency for all the money. You'd have to give me an awful lot at the beginning and give me a contract that is so wonderful that you can't walk away because you know you're going to be gone in a short time. It's I don't think Romney, you know, everybody recognizes, no matter how you feel about his politics or his career, you have to say that he was an incredible businessman who was able to, for instance, take the Olympics, you know, and make a profit out of it, turn everything around. I mean, that alone was an incredible thing. And then everything else, I don't think he could do anything. I really think that the system is the problem. You can't really and truly, one person coming in, I mean, that's why I'm positive that whoever replaces Shinseki will not be able to accomplish much, because it is a systemic problem. Unless you change the system, human beings aren't going to be able to really do much about it. And that's the way everybody felt at the time. I certainly remember us going through more than one director.
Well, and I don't really see much difference. I've used the VA example many times in talking about, we don't have to imagine what government-run healthcare will be. We already know what government-run healthcare is. It's the VA hospital, and it has never worked well, ever. It's I just remember, as a medical student and a resident, one example. I was radiology, so we read CAT scans. When we do CAT scans, you have you give a contrast agent into a vein in the arm frequently. There were two kinds of contrast agents at that time. One was less expensive, had been around longer, but it had a much higher rate of allergic reactions that could include anaphylactic reactions and death. So there were some significant risks with that contrast agent. The newer contrast agent was more expensive, but the rate of reaction was like 1 in 30,000, so low. Everybody in private practice was using that new contrast agent. The VA, if I was on call and had a veteran who had an allergic reaction to that contrast in the past, I had to call in the middle of the night, try to reach an administrator of the VA to get permission to use this contrast agent. According to the VA, you know, our military were somehow, it was okay to put them at risk like that, unnecessary risk. And that was just one tiny example. It was just so offensive that, I'm sorry, these people risk their lives for our country, some of the most valuable people we've ever had in our country, and this is how we're treating them. And to the VA administration, they were expendable.
That's
weird.
Right. And I still remember in a meeting that I had with a whole group of people, these were VA representatives, I remember Udall was there at the time. He was Congressman Udall. We had representatives from every organization, and it was all about just building this thing. And all they kept giving us were acronyms. I mean, they were, you know, as government agencies do, they try to explain everything away in words that you really are not familiar with, and acronyms that you don't understand. And finally, I said, look, let's try this one. JBDT. Pete, just build the damn thing. I gave him, and I said, you know, do you understand that? What if I use that all the time, you know? You get it? Just build this damn thing. Forget about all these stupid excuses that we're getting and the constant references that nobody understands here. And, you know, and it's just a typical example of trying to deal with that kind of a bureaucracy. So, therefore, when this came up, I thought to myself, well, okay, what can anybody do about, what can the state do about this? And if I were indeed governor, what would I do under these circumstances? Is it something that I have any control over or any responsibility to deal with? And I believe it is, and so I thought of you because you have an expertise that I believe is enormously valuable here, and that's how I called you and said, you know, what do you think? What can we do about this? What should we do as a state? And anyway, that's the whole thing.
Yay! Very well said. But, you know, I think the important thing, we wanted to start out by putting it into perspective, and you did a great job of that. We want to start with, at the 5 o'clock hour, we're going to start with our ideas, but primarily our... The first project, we're going to call this Operation VIP, Veterans Innovation Project. Our immediate primary goal is to get veterans needing critical services off of the waiting list at the VA hospitals beginning in Colorado, and we'd love it if this could extend to the rest of the country. We can make a template here that can be pretty simple. The next, and the rule of that is, you know, what is KISS, right? Keep it simple, stupid.
Right.
Right. So we want to keep this simple, but the long-term primary goal, and you kind of brought this up, get the government out of the insurance business, get the government out of the healthcare business, allow our veterans to have access to private insurance, and they can get VIP care at any private institution that they want. Now, that is separate from the military hospitals. The VA is not the only insurance that the military has. It's actually a somewhat complicated system with TRICARE and all this other stuff. But let's give our veterans more choices. And the voucher system that you mentioned, that you had tried to get even into, didn't even get into committee or get a hearing in committee, that's what we think would be the best way to do it. It would be pretty straightforward. But imagine if you could get rid of the bureaucracy, think of how much money that could save. Because right now the government owns the hospitals. They pay the doctors, they pay the nurses and all the providers, they pay all the administrators that work there, and they're paying for veterans care. And too much of the money is spent on the administration portion. Think how much care those veterans could get using that same amount of money if we could privatize it.
Exactly. I think it's a worthy goal. By the way, I tried the same thing. I wrote a bill up. I didn't get anywhere with it, but I remember that I'd only been in Congress for a couple of years and constantly dealing with Medicare problems, and finally I said, you know, that's the solution there too. We have to voucherize it. We have to get the government out of being the provider of the service, the determiner of the cost, and the bureaucratic oversight for the whole thing. It can never work well. It will always be incredibly expensive and certainly not the best quality. So I think the same thing would have worked for Medicare, and it turned 65 and you say, okay, you know, you've got this system if you want to get into it, here's another one you can access. We'll give you a voucher, buy an insurance policy, we'll make it so that the voucher equals what the services you get under Medicare, and then go out in the marketplace. And you know what
Thanks
happens?
Thanks, Tom. I've got to introduce you. Thank you so much for being on. Sorry, we have to go to break.
No problem.